for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The end of the year and the holiday season are a time many Americans reflect, take stock, and look ahead. Things that feel particularly important after this divisive election. Here to discuss moral leadership in politically difficult times, Marianne Edgar Buddy, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington, D.C., Yaha Hendi, Georgetown University's Muslim chaplain, Rabbi Shira Stutman of the Sixth and I Synagogue, and joining us from the studios of NPR in New York, the Reverend Derek Harkins of the Union Theological Seminary, and joining us by phone from Keller, Texas, Bob Roberts, senior pastor at Northwood Church. Throughout the hour, I'll look forward to hearing your thoughts, your questions, your ideas. Give us a call at 800-433-8850. Send an email to drshow@wamu.org. Follow us on Facebook or send us a tweet. And welcome to all of you here in the studio and in New York and in Keller, Texas.
Well, thank you for having us. So great to be with you.
Thank you all. Reverend Derek Harkins, I'd like to start with you and get you to talk about the challenges that you face as a faith leader in this current political climate.
Sure, Diane. It's so good to be with you. I'll say a couple of things very quickly, and one of them is the from a pastoral context, understanding that the sense of trauma, the sense of fear, the sense of grief even are very real, and addressing those. Of course, we want to unite and come together, but I'm compelled initially to speak to the hurts and fears and concerns that are evidence to, you know, the day after the election, we had a gathering at Union Seminary, and one of our students who's Muslim, she got up and she spoke about the imminent sense of fear that her family has expressed now, very, very real and very concrete. And of course, we can rehearse those kinds of stories many times over. So I think square one is to speak into those places where there is that sense of vulnerability and fear, and bring the measure of encouragement and the measure of resolve to move forward into the future as part of what we do. And at Union, and a number of our work, a lot of our work, I should say now, is really focused on doing that, helping people to move into what needs to be the next kind of step in regards to stepping into a very clearly unknown future.
Bishop Marianne Buddy, wondering how you saw your own role in this election and how you see it following the results.
As the election season unfolded and became more and more strident and divisive in tone, and quite honestly speaking, as a Christian, the real abandonment of any real sense of Christian values coming from the candidate that was clearly garnering a significant portion of the Christian vote was truly disconcerting, and it allowed many of us to feel as if that Donald Trump's election could not happen with the support of Christians, because there was no real effort on his part to speak to the Christian values that are at the heart of the broad base of America. And so I think it caused for those of us in the Christian faith some real soul searching as to how it could be. And we were talking about this just before the show, how it could be that there was such a sentiment of wanting to blow up the political class. That was language that was used a lot by Christians, and that it was worth it to align oneself with someone who was so unapologetically un-Christian in the way he was organizing his campaign.
And to you, Imam Yaha Hendi, tell us a little bit about the needs of the students you work with and how they and you functioned during the election season.
Well, the students are afraid, are troubled, are worried. Not only at Georgetown University, but across the country, there are undocumented students who are about to finish their PhD, master's, bachelor's, and worried. Worried that by the beginning of the next semester, they will be asked to go back home, whatever that home is. And their classmates are afraid, are worried what will happen to their classmates with whom they went to college for so many years. In terms of the Muslim community, the fear is also real. There have been so many cases of attacks on Muslim students, either pulling their hijab off or throwing them off the stairs. Across the country, we hear of a case every day. Whether it's happening on campus or off campus, it is affecting the way Muslim students think. At Georgetown University, we're very blessed. We have a president, Jack DeJoya, who came to a Friday service 2 days, 3 days after the elections and said to the students, I am here with you, I'm for you. We will not allow anyone to undermine Muslim students on campus. Wednesday morning, a day after the election, 500 Muslims, Jews, Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, Baha'is, people of faith and people of no faith came together to pray for America, to pray for the nation, to pray for all of us. Those who have voted for Trump and those who have voted for Clinton came together. My message has been, let us all be in this together.
And to you, Rabbi Shira Stutman, you also work with younger people. How did they react? How did you interact with them?
Yeah, a lot of the young people, we work mostly with people in their 20s and 30s, and a lot of them moved to D.C. after college or grad school, very idealistic, wanting to work in government, the very government that lots of American voters voted to blow up. And so there was an incredibly dispirited feeling among a lot of our Sixth and Iers, but especially a lot of the ones who work in government, because they came here because they wanted to work on climate change or because they wanted to create a more peaceful, more just world. And so the anxiety of all the questions that lay in front of them was quite overwhelming. We advertised, for instance, a class, a workshop for people who are working in government to help come together and process the election so that they could begin to make decisions. Do they want to serve under the next administration? Do they want to walk away? And overnight, our first workshop sold out. Mm-hmm. And so we have a few more coming down the pike in January just for people who really thought that America was going in one direction and are now living in the anxiety about what the actual direction is that our country will be moving in.
And to you, Pastor Bob Roberts, tell us about your church. I know it's quite diverse, and that does include very differing political views.
It is. So don't hold the Texas against me. I'm from way south down here. But our church is diverse, and we desegregated intentionally our church about 3.5 years ago. It had gradually been happening. But we took a stronger stand on that from our elders and our staff and so forth. Our church has also been aggressively involved in Muslim outreach. That might be easy to do or maybe not in the Northeast, but trying to do that in Texas, Dallas in particular, can be a little bit challenging. So I think the biggest challenge I'm trying to communicate to my people right now is, number one, as a matter of fact, I'm doing a whole sermon series in January on anxiety. How do we deal with the stress of what we feel? I'm at a church where I would say the younger people probably went for Clinton and the older people probably went for Trump. So I have a mix of everything in my church in terms of who they voted for, how they view the world. You're dealing with worldviews. I think this election showed a sharp differentiation between millennials and older generations. I think it showed a sharp differentiation in worldviews. And so the challenge that I face is not saying it's this view or that view, but how do we have different views and live in conversation? How do we talk about this? You voted for one person, your grandparents or parents voted for another person. What is it going to look like at Christmas to sit down and talk and have deep conversations on this? Our country, what concerns me, is deeply divided. You know, I don't look at the election results and feel like one side really won. Frankly, I feel like in many ways we all lost, except for the candidates, perhaps, that won the elections. So I think the challenge for us is how do we build back the relationship between the right and the left, the Democrats and the Republicans, the young and the old? And I don't think we figured that out. I think we know our political positions. I don't think we know how to relationally communicate. I don't think we know how to engage. And that's where my passion is. And so, like, for example, Martin Luther King Day that comes up in January, the Sunday before that, we're going to have a huge celebration at our church, but it just won't be races. Yahya Hindi will have a couple of mosques that'll be with us for that day. We'll have ethnic food. We'll have halal, all of it.
Bob Roberts, he's founder and senior pastor of Northwood Church in Keller, Texas. When we come back, I hope you'll join us. Questions, comments, 800-433-8850. Stay with us.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And welcome back. We're talking with members of various faith communities today to talk about how they are interacting with their own members of their communities and how they can encourage us to be with everyone, whether we voted for Hillary Clinton, whether we voted for Donald Trump, whether we feel strongly about banking regulations or climate change, whatever we feel. The point is there has to be communication, and there are no better people in this world to help us understand how to do that. Then my five guests today, Yahya Hindi is Georgetown University Muslim chaplain. Shira Stutman is senior rabbi at synagogue at 6th and I here in Washington, D.C. Bishop Marianne Buddy of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. Joining us from New York City, Reverend Derek Harkins. He's at Union Theological Seminary, and from Keller, Texas, Bob Roberts. He's founder and senior pastor of Northwood Church. Rabbi Stutman, there have been stories about how this election is bringing Muslims and Jews together. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. I think one of the big surprises for a lot of the folks, Sixth and I, has been the rise in anti-Semitism. I think for a lot of the younger people, they really felt like in America that was something that was behind them. And with the rise of anti-Semitism has come a feeling of vulnerability that they haven't previously experienced. But even with our vulnerability, we recognize that there are communities that are more vulnerable than we are, and one of them is the Muslim community. And so over the last months, really, even before the election, we at Sixth and I have been reaching out to partners in the Muslim community. Just last Friday, a bunch of Sixth and Iers went to Juma prayer with Adams, D.C., as a way of standing in solidarity with the Muslim community and acknowledging that they might be more vulnerable than us in this moment, but we are standing with them in any way that they choose moving forward. And I think it's extremely powerful, especially because in recent time, the Muslim and the Jewish communities have been set up against each other because of the Middle East and Israel and Palestine. And what we are saying to each other right now is that there may be areas where we disagree, but the areas where we agree is that this needs to be a country where all Americans, all people who live here, need to live in dignity and respect for their values and their traditions.
Pastor Roberts, you made a name for yourself by doing a Muslim outreach. You also talked about desegregation, which your church did several years ago. How many people left your congregation as a result?
That's not a proper question to ask a Baptist pastor from Texas because we want to grow our churches. But the truth of the matter is we lost about 400 people in two phases. The first group, when we began to reach out to the Muslim community, the response was, hey, we're doing events with Muslims. We're having youth events. We're doing community projects together. They're going to blow us up. And, you know, I would tell them, hey, you believe you're going to heaven? It's all right. But that didn't seem to comfort them a lot. But the reality is, and I think the rabbi listening to her talk would understand this, though we lost people, we actually gained many more millennials that wound up coming to our church. And the same with reference to the race issue. We lost people once again, but we wound up gaining people because there's certain things that we know are wrong in our society, and the church should be a place not to just endorse the wrongs, but show a different path. Mm. And speaking as an evangelical, too often we endorse broader culture sometimes instead of being a path that's alternative, a path that's more biblical and truthful to how we treat others.
Bishop Marianne, how do you reach across to others who may be there at the cathedral, but to those who may have left because the views presented are sounding too liberal for
happens,
them.
And it's not just the cathedral, Diane. I serve congregations up and down Maryland in many communities where the values of Donald Trump's campaign might be something that they would support. I would say that the common ground for us is always our sacred texts and our sacred traditions and our core beliefs and values. And when we can speak that language to one another, and when people trust me that I truly am, like they, a follower of Jesus, committed to his path, committed to his truth, and I speak from that grounding, there's a lot of common ground that we can find. And even if we disagree on a particular issue or a candidate, we can find a place from a place to begin. The harder part is when we come up against acts of real, as you were saying earlier, Rabbi, real acts of violence against groups of people. Then we have to take a stand. And then we have to say, or I have to say, we are still here, and this Christian community stands with those who are being attacked. And those are the times when it might get harder in terms of where we might find ourselves up against a different issue.
Imam, how do you react?
Well, the Quran itself calls on me to resist evil with a better course of action.
Yes.
The Quran says that word by word. When someone attacks you, you attack back with love and reconciliation. But also when I see at Georgetown University, the rabbi of Georgetown University, Rabbi Rachel Gardner, and the Jewish community came to pray with us. The Protestant community, the Catholic community came and prayed with us. So I tell my Muslim community, yes, we are being the target of hate and discrimination. The best course of action is to educate our fellow neighbors, reach out to our fellow neighbors, build the bridges with our fellow neighbors. At the end of the day, Islam teaches us how we can agree to disagree without being disagreeable. We can agree to disagree on politics, on religion, on God, on the Day of Judgment, but we find ways to communicate with one another in a civil way.
So, Reverend Harkins, to you, where does the idea of unity fit in? How do you take a stand against what you see and know is unjust?
Well, I think, and I've been saying this for the last several weeks now, that if the only response we have to those things that we will deem to be outrageous and wrong and unjust, and they seem to be coming with great regularity, is to be in a furor and run around with our arms up in the air, we'll be exhausted by the end of February. But I think what's coming to shape now, and I think something at Union that we're doing more and more, is really figuring out how to articulate what we do stand for that is just, that is morally right, that is compassionate. And if we can be grounded in that and doing those things, not oppositionally to Donald Trump or the Trump administration, but because it's what we believe and what we stand for as people of faith, as communities of faith. If we stand for, you know, for example, there'll be a watch night service there in Washington at Metropolitan AME this coming December 31st, and our friend, our scholar in residence, William Barber, who many people remember from the Democratic Convention, will be there with hundreds and hundreds of people, really figuring out how we as progressive Christians can make sure that our presence and our work and our witness is productive and not simply in opposition to what we don't like by way of who the president is.
Bishop Marianne, do you find more people attending church now, perhaps seeking some kind of comfort, no matter where they stand politically, but seeking comfort and relationship within the church?
I have seen that, and I've heard it from others of my colleagues. And I think meaning is also something that people are hungry for, trying to get their bearings. And even neighbors on the street who aren't churchgoers at all stop me and want to talk about, they're just grateful that we had an interfaith walk. They were grateful that we had a prayer service. There seems to be a longing for the religious and spiritual institutions to stay strong in this time and to be true to who we are.
Do you find the same, Rabbi?
Oh, for sure. I find that, you know, Jews as a people were always yearning to create the world in a way that it is not yet. And this past election has felt for many people like a giant step backward toward the world of justice. And so there is this desire for people to come together to try to figure out the next step forward. In the week right after the election, we had well over 1,000 people come to different services that we had at Sixth and I, which is a lot for us in the course of the week. And for many of them, it was an opportunity to look for, I wouldn't yet say that people were looking for hope, but that they were looking for solace, and solace in community. And in the language of a people that has seen pretty bad things over the course of our history and has withstood the test of time. So it's this ability to be together and to mourn together. I don't know about in Judaism, there's a lot of talk about sitting Shiva and all of the different rituals after a death. But then ultimately, after you get up from sitting Shiva, you have to return to the world as it is. And how are we going to return together using the values that we hold dear as a way of making the differences that we know need to be made?
But surely not all of those who attended Sixth and I voted in one way.
Surely not all of them did. However, I think that there was, certainly they didn't, but there were a tremendous number of people who did, first of all, who did vote for Hillary Clinton, but also there was just a certain amount of anger and disregard for what we consider core Jewish values in the campaign of Donald Trump. And so in the fact that so many Americans really voted for a candidate who didn't reflect what we consider core Jewish values, there were a tremendous number of people who were disappointed and incredibly sad.
Can I speak to that, Diane? There was just briefly, what I sensed, and several people said this to me, living in the Washington area, and perhaps this area might have had a distinct experience because as you were saying, so many people work for the government and work for the good of government, and there was this collective grief that I experienced, not just in church, but a kind of, no matter how you voted, it was a surprise, and that implication was some we were still dealing with.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show.
I wanted to say that what the community is looking for from us, all the communities, a prophetic voice of reconciliation, a prophetic voice of justice for all, a prophetic voice of hope that can reconcile all of our differences, that can bring us for an optimistic, hopeful moving forward.
Where is that likely to come from?
I think that's likely to come from our clergymen and women, from all our clergymen and women, but also our politicians are required to stand on the pulpit and say, America is united.
Bob Roberts, do you agree?
I do. I was disturbed by the amount. I'm an evangelical, and frankly, I was disturbed by the amount of evangelical pastors that endorsed Donald Trump. I think it's great they voted for Trump. I'm not going to tell them they don't have the right to do that. But I believe the role of the pastor is to speak prophetically to power. Yes. I mean, when you get in bed with a political party, I'm only as relevant as that politician is in power. I've worked with President Bush, President Obama, but I did so not in endorsing, but in community engagement and global engagement and religious freedom. And I think we pastors, in attempting to grow our churches and to be relevant, we failed to speak prophetically. We know how to grow our churches numerically in the evangelical church. We don't know how to grow them spiritually. We don't know how to grow them culturally. We don't know how to grow their thinking. And that's critical for the world that we live in. We're at a massive shift. And if we make Trump or Clinton the issue, then we can't speak to the issues. Mm-hmm. We can speak to the issues without endorsing or trashing candidates. I don't go there, but I do challenge the issues.
Reverend Harkins.
Well, I'm going to be a little bit of the countervailing voice here. I think you're right about speaking prophetically, but we in no way, shape, or form can get to reconciliation if it involves the normalization of misogyny, of racism, of hatred, of Islamophobia, of homophobia. And the problem we have right now with moving toward reconciliation is that the very thing emanating from the president-elect are those things. So how can we get to a point of reconciliation when the other side, if you will, is not in a position to want to reconcile as well?
But
so
Reverend, I think that Harkin, don't you wonder whether he will take back those kinds of comments? He's already rolled back many of the things he said during the campaign. Don't you expect him to soften his tone somewhat?
Well, I think a couple of things are at play there. I think part of his rolling back is because of the incompetence about what he proposed by way of policy in the first place and sees that it's just not tenable. But I think the issue is the nuance of what he promotes. In other words, it's not even as much of what Donald Trump himself does or says, but who he empowers, those people who are putting swastikas on walls, those people who are grabbing hijabs off of women, those people who are moving back to the idea of a racialized America, a homophobic America. So I think he's got to do not only just a matter of rolling back his policy ideas, as inept as they might be, but he's got to also disassemble what he's built in terms of this behemoth of a monster of hatred and phobia.
That's where the witness of love comes in, I think, speaking so profoundly as the imam did, that when Christians and Jews and Muslims and all people of goodwill respond to hatred with love, hearts are changed. And so that's part of it. It's not just coming together to find common ground. It's those transformative moments of cultural witness when the entire country sees a better way. And we saw that with Dr. King. We've seen it in other moments when we are inspired to be our best rather than to be reduced to our worst.
Marianne Edgar Buddy, she is Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. When we come back, we'll open the phones, take your calls. I look forward to speaking with you. Thank you. And one slight announcement I want to make before we move on for my last hour on the air this Friday. I'm taking your questions. So if you would be good enough to record your question in a voice memo and send it to drshow885@gmail.com. I would be delighted. And we'll do that for my last hour on the air live this coming Friday. Now, I'm going to open the phones, 800-433-8850. First to Sandy in St. Louis, Missouri. You're on the air.
Hey, Diane. I was calling because I had to call in because I'm just incredibly frustrated with all of the, quite honestly, hypocrisy I keep hearing about concerns for people's views and, oh gosh, what is it that we have to, all people, we have to respect their values. That was one of the quotes of one of the people on the show today. For the last 8 years, there has been no concern for the views of other people. There's been no respect for other people's values. Republicans, conservatives have been demonized if they disagree on policy because we're racist. And I know that's what you're thinking right now. You're thinking, oh, this is just a racist, homophobic, misogynist woman. I'm really concerned about the fact that there has been no changing of people, trying to change people's hearts on the left. It's been shoving things down people's throats. It started with President Obama saying, well, elections have consequences and we won. And we have to pass the bill before, and Nancy Pelosi, we have to pass the bill before you can see what's in it. There's been no reaching across the aisle. It's been constantly, if you disagree on policy, you're evil. And that's what I've been getting from the left. And it's very frustrating to hear and see those kinds of reactions because you're basically saying, and agree, you're just reinforcing the fact that there is no desire to listen to the other side. There is no desire to address their values or respect their concerns.
All right. I thank you for your call. Reverend Harkins, how do you respond?
Well, you know, and we can go back and forth about political policy issues. I think about the fact that when George W. Bush was president, Democrats supported the efforts around the war. Democrats supported efforts around immigration. Democrats supported several other elements. When President Obama was president, we hear "you lie" from the floor of the House. So, I mean, we can go back and forth about perceptions, and that's going to always be the ongoing conversation. The one thing I will say, just to pivot back very quickly to the end of the last sort of segment, when we talk about what's powerful in terms of moving us toward reconciliation, and I couldn't agree more that love is central and seminal to what I understand theologically, morally, and ethically. But I also believe in what Martin Luther King said, that, you know, justice without love is harsh and unrelenting, but love without justice is sentimental and ineffectual. So I think we need to really understand that while love speaks to the idea of reconciling with others, but we can't relent on the need for justice. So I'd respectfully disagree with your caller in saying that there hasn't been that effort. I think people are quite entrenched and in camp where they are, and we just, as people of faith, we certainly have to keep moving towards some place of again, reconciliation and some place of unification, whatever that looks like.
Pastor Roberts, would you like to comment?
I think she's right. I think that many on the right have felt marginalized by the left, but I think the right does the exact same thing to the left. And so my concern is that dialogue really isn't accomplishing what it needs to. We're entrenched, we're tribal, and very tribal in our country right now. One of the things we try to do is to do engagement things.
So, like, instead of telling Christians love Muslims, what we do is projects together with Muslims here in our community. I learned something from a man named Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who's had a profound impact on me. He said, you start with the hand, working together for the common good, which captures the heart, which then changes your mind. And the problem with dialogue, it all starts with the head. And so we're speaking to one another without relationship, without trust, and we disagree and we wonder why. Well, you have to be in relationship. So I think we're going to have to come to a different way of engagement. Talk is critical, but we need to be in relationship with how we're serving the common good of the city.
Talk is critical, but listening is equally critical, Imam. Yeah.
Listen, well, in Judaism, you know, about you read about Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Listen, O Israel, our Lord God, God is one. God wants Israel to listen. We need to master the art of listening to one another. That's number one. Number two, for me, reconciliation and social justice go hand in hand. Yes, we need to reconcile. We need to listen to one another. But at the same time, we need to agree that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. We need to transform dialogue to practice. We don't only need to talk about our religions and what we need America to be. We need to practice that dialogue together, the right and the left.
And Rabbi Strutman, the question becomes how?
I think that is the question, because listening, of course, is critical, but you know, in Judaism, we talk about verbs. There are never an end unto themselves, right? So the act of listening cannot be an end unto itself. It has to be a means to an end. And so when I hear callers like the one who just called in, I do agree with her that I do think that people on both sides of the proverbial, I don't even know if there is an aisle anymore, but on both sides of the aisle are demonizing the other. And it is something that we at Sixth and I are trying to work on in terms of reaching out to people who feel differently. Interestingly, we reached out to one of the local evangelical churches in a hope opening a dialogue, but we found what seems to me to be an incredibly progressive, liberal, left-wing evangelical church. So we still have a little bit more reaching out work to do. But it is about the idea of what comes next. I think that listening to what is inside people's hearts, right? The feeling of fear and the feeling of uncertainty, which I think is pervasive in America, is what we need to get to, is listening deeper. Because I'm happy to listen to people who espouse ideas that I consider homophobic or misogynistic or anti-Muslim. But just listening to hateful voices is not enough. If we can't figure out how to go deeper, we're not going to move very far at all.
Let's go to Annandale, Virginia. Bill, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. I just want to address some of what seems like a lot of irrational fears that I'm listening to, whether it's climophobia on the left, where they say, oh, Trump is going to destroy the earth in 40, 50 years, some of the fears, irrational fears from that I hear from hijabs being pulled off. We're taught that we shouldn't prejudice Muslims or think badly of Muslims for flying planes into buildings or shooting up a daycare in California. Are the Muslims being taught not to fear non-Muslims for fearing their hijabs are going to be pulled off? I mean, if we're going to teach irrational fears, is it being taught on the people who think Trump is going to hurt Muslims or destroy the climate?
Yeah, handy.
I want to tell my friend, Islam and the Muslim community are not responsible for the acts of terrorism. Terrorism has no religion. And when a crazy Muslim does wrong, the entire community should not be rounded up as if they are to blame for what a crazy Muslim does. I do not blame the entire Christian faith or the Christian community for the act of a crazy Christian or the act of a crazy Jew. And therefore, we must move away from those general statements that we make about a community that has contributed to America in every way, shape, and form. We have contributed to its intelligence, its safety, its security, its well-being economically, and therefore demonizing Muslim women who are doctors in hospital treating everyone that comes through their doors, demonizing Muslims who serve in the U.S. military, does not help America. So we have to be fully united in speaking against Islamophobia, not because it's against in favor of Muslims. Any attack on one Muslim is an attack on every Jew, on every Christian, but it's also an attack on our Constitution. So I speak in defense of our Constitution, not only of Muslims.
Bishop Marianne, right after the inauguration comes the Million Women March. Tell me what the hopes of that march will be.
Diane, I would be the last one to know. Not that I have... because I'm not involved in it, although people from all across the country are contacting me for housing and places to stay when they come. I will be at the National Cathedral praying with the president-elect and all those who gather for the post-inaugural prayer service, which we just gathered to plan yesterday. So that's where I will be on the 20th. I will be praying with and for the president and his new cabinet and all those and the country. All faiths will be represented at his request, and we will pray for the good of our nation.
And where will you be, Rabbi Stutman?
So, first, I want to say thank you to the imam who spoke so beautifully. I am proud to be seated with you, and also a little bit sickened that we live in a country where a religious faith tradition that carries with it a tremendous amount of beauty and love and justice, even as it also has its dark spots, as does Judaism, by the way.
As does Christianity.
Fine. I'll only speak for my own. can be maligned in such a way. So I do just want to say that. So on Saturday morning, which for us, of course, is also Shabbat morning, of the day after inauguration, we will be having a gathering at 6th and I, where we will be bringing together the Jewish community, but also the Washington, D.C. community, to sing together, to read from the Torah together, and to talk together. And then we will go out and march as a community in honor of lifting up the voices of women, all women in our country and in our world, and in honor of the fight for dignity and the fight for bringing together all the diversity of voices that actually are what make our country great.
Do you expect men to be
well? I'm going to be bringing my husband and my son, so I hope that we have a lot of men there. I hope we represent all of the gender spectrum at this gathering, and we really lift up all the voices that need to be heard.
And what do you hope that lifting those voices will show the nation and the world?
I guess there are a few things. First of all, I hope that they remind us not to sit and marinate in our anxiety and our fear. I think a part of this is really just for us to remember that we do still have a voice and a place and a path forward. And I think, secondly, it is important for the new administration and for America to see the fullness of the tapestry of this amazing country. We talk about, I hate the image of the melting pot. I much prefer the image of the salad bowl, right? Of all these different kinds of people who can come together as allies in important moments and share the fight.
Shira Stutman, senior rabbi at the synagogue 6th and I here in Washington. Bishop Marianne Buddy, she is bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Washington. Yahya Hendy is Georgetown University's Muslim chaplain. Reverend Derek Harkins, he's at Union Theological Seminary. And Bob Roberts, founder and senior pastor at Northwood Church in Keller, Texas. I thank you all for being with us.
Thank you.
And you're
thank
listening
you, Diane.
To the Diane Rehm Show. It is not over yet. We have another caller in Manassas, Virginia. You're on the air, David.
Thank you, Diane. First of all, let me thank you for
establishing a forum in which conversations like this have been able to take place over the last many, many years. And I think this is really the lifeblood, for the lack of a better word, of a good, inclusive democracy that ultimately leads to the benefit of all of us in this great country. Having said that, I think, you know, I am not a Democrat or a Republican. I voted on both sides of this presumed aisle that we keep talking about. And I do think there have been several points that have been made that are very valid, in that we have stopped in our ability to listen to each other, to engage each other, and to have a productive conversation in which we can consider what is best for the country. I think this entrenched feeling has progressively been increasing over the last many, many years. What I have found disturbing, I am a Hindu immigrant, but immigrant is tough for me to say, because I came to this country back in when I was 7 years old in the mid-70s. So I have felt as much a part of the United States as I could possibly feel. And I think what I have seen over the last 6-8 weeks or so particularly has been somewhat disturbing. I'll give you a very one example that I think may
very
answer
briefly,
to this.
Briefly, sir, we're almost out of time.
Sure. There was the day after the election in a high school locally, the Pledge of Allegiance was being recited and everybody stood up. There are a set of students that pointed to Latin, Hispanic, and Asian-looking students and told them to sit down, quote, "This is not your country anymore," close quotes. "We have made a decision." That I find just fundamentally very disturbing. And since then, what I've noted is that people that are either in the minority races or however you choose to qualify them have come to a kind of a subtle decision of not becoming involved in much of government or playing a key role moving forward, almost with the conclusion that their opinion or their involvement or their contribution really doesn't matter, nor is it welcome. I find that to be a fundamental flaw in what I think could be a democracy that really needs to succeed. I think what we need for this country is inclusiveness, not relegation. What's more disturbing is that I don't know that that's really seen as a problem. That's where I wanted to see if that others in the panel have seen something along those lines.
You know, for me, I want in the years to come to be governed by politics of justice, economics of equity, and covenant of community. I want us in the days to come and the years to come to listen to one another so that we may end injustice, so that we may promote harmony and mutual respect.
Thank you. What a beautiful way to close. Thank you all so much for joining us, and thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Baker, Denise Couture, Rebecca Kaufman, Lisa Dunn, Alexandra Boti, Danielle Knight, Erica R. Hendry, and Allison Brody. The engineer is Douglas Bell. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, and podcasts. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. And we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.